Welcome, guys, back. Welcome to this week's A-List Lowdown, coming at you Friday, March 28th, 2025, with Drugs or Us and Entre Nulada. I read that like it was Spanish, but I assume it's French.
Yeah, that Rumble, we're having trouble streaming to Rumble again. I don't know why. I set it up properly, but...
This Rumble's a piece of shit. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, jeez, dude.
I'm just saying. I can't even use the platform. I can't. Sorry, Rumble. I don't know why.
Do you know what my topic is about?
Rumble.
Lada.
I just finally got the message that it's not working. No, I don't know French that good. So.
To be honest with you, it's between us. It means between us, but. It's Lada, the old Russian car, right? The car that was made in the Cold War. It's becoming the meme of Canada, right? I mean, this is what's so funny about it. So with the whole auto sector and the bailouts that are ready to happen, even though the tariffs really haven't happened yet, and they're like a big bunch of fear-mongering that's really not as bad as people say. And, it's one thing after another right now. Like, it's hard to keep up.
It's hard to keep up.
Let's start with a bit of a meme
again, you know.
Let's start with a meme here. Then, did you see this big sign of Carney on the wall with this guy? Our campaign office is up and running, Toronto Center. Only Mark Carney and the Liberal team will keep Canada strong, and I'm proud to be running. And there's a guy right next to like a bunch of piss and graffiti on the sign. I mean, it's just. So the comments are just gold, right? They're like, oh, there's nothing like a liberal sign right on the street in the city with a bunch of piss and garbage. And there might even be shit. I think that's a pile of shit in the back there, even on the ground. Look, just running down the side there. What?
Zoom in. You got to zoom in on that.
Well, I can't. I got to save the pic and then, you know, I'm already. Oh, no, I guess I could zoom in a little bit on it. Let me try.
Let's see what you got there. I mean, we need to know. Someone's already done it. Someone did it in the comments.
Oh, really? Okay.
I can't see the comments anymore. I could see them a second ago.
I gotta zoom out from 300%.
What'd you do?
I have to zoom out to 300% here.
You unpresented.
I unpresented because it was turning into a nightmare. You see, you think somebody did it in the comments? Yeah.
I thought I did. What are the comments?
Oh my god. That's a shout out to you, God strong. Nice pile of poo. Liberal streets are wild. Oh,
it's pretty unbelievable. So I think if you don't if you just don't change anything, then I should be able to just swing in here with my screen share.
Pee poop. Look behind you, liberal policies. I mean,
I've stolen the screen share.
I like the graffiti.
Have you read this yet?
God, it's so funny. Okay, no.
I'm going to read this to you and close your eyes, sit back, listen, and give me your impressions on it.
Okay, I'll listen in intently.
So, the Right Honorable Mark Carney, Prime Minister of Canada. The Prime Minister, Mark Carney, spoke with the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. The Prime Minister and the President had a very constructive conversation.
That already sounds like it's AI.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm pretty sure it's AI. The Prime Minister and the President had a very constructive conversation about the relationship between our two countries. The leaders agreed to begin comprehensive negotiations about a new economic and security relationship immediately following the election. In the interim, the leaders agreed that conversations between the Minister of International Trade and Intergovernmental Affairs and the President of the King's Privy Council for Canada, Dominic LeBlanc, and the United States Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick, will intensify to address immediate concerns. The Prime Minister told the President that he would be working hard for the next month to earn the right to represent Canada in those discussions. The Prime Minister informed the President that his government will implement retaliatory tariffs to protect Canadian workers and our economy following the announcement of additional U.S. trade actions on April 2nd, 2025. So any takeaways from that other than the AI thing?
I don't know, man. It's pretty bland. It just feels like a generic kind of statement, to be honest with you.
Well, let's just take a look at this one line. I mean,
okay. I mean, the King's Privy Council is the
King's Privy Council. Right. Why is this coming up in the why is this coming up in our thing? So I this popped it up. What's the King's Privy Council? Let's take a look. So the King's Privy Council for Canada is a formal body of advisors to the Canadian monarch. What?
King Carney or
no? Well
probably, who's the Canadian monarch? Well, the King of Charles, right?
They said it was the King of Charles, is what they said. I mean, this is the other weird thing. I swear I've never seen the king thing like we've seen. I mean, people commented this, like, this happens all the time. It's okay. Well, I don't remember seeing Trudeau or any of these other people say, you know, his royal king of Canada or queen of Canada. Or maybe we just weren't as triggered because it was a queen and she was less threatening. So anyway, advisors to the Canadian monarch, King Charles, composed of current and former cabinet ministers, chief justices, and other distinguished individuals appointed for life. Its primary function is to advise the king on state and constitutional matters. I thought this was just a
formality.
Yeah, I thought it was ceremonial.
Decoration, ceremonial.
In the context of Canadian trade agreements, the Privy Council itself does not directly negotiate or implement these accords. Instead, such responsibilities fall under the purview of specific government ministries, particularly Global Affairs Canada, which manages diplomatic relations and promotes international trade. The Privy Council office supports the Prime Minister and Cabinet in their decision-making process, including matters related to trade. For instance, the PCO, Privy Council Office's 24-25 Departmental Plan, highlights a focus on modernizing international trade agreements and strengthening trade within Canada. Wait, what? So that's the 24-25 plan. Shouldn't that just be the 25 plan in response of Trump's new threat? While the Privy Council as a whole provides overarching advice on governance, the negotiation and administration of trade agreements are primarily handled by designated ministries and officials within the Canadian government. So,
Well, hey, wait, before you go from there, look what you've got highlighted right there. Global Affairs Canada. I mean, we can't.
I'm going to click on this because I got to see where it dates.
We cannot mention that that's Canada's version of the USAID, really. I mean, there's 137 pages of funding that goes through Global Affairs that most of it should not be.
So Global Affairs Canada, we define, shape, and advance Canada's interests and values in a complex global environment. We manage diplomatic relations, promote international trade, and provide consular assistance. We lead international development, humanitarian, and peace security assistance efforts. So, of course, this is the page that got made famous. Now, where do you think that...
The funding.
Ooh, here we go. I found it. Let's see if the page is fixed yet, because this page was down for a while, right? So it definitely doesn't look how it used to. So I don't see the ability to just check on what they were doing before. Anyway, I've got the PDF of everything they were up to before. Anyway, so I just thought that was kind of interesting that the King's Privy Council is coming up. I mean, it all seems weird to me. That being said, I mean, there is a part of me that just hopes Carney wins so that Alberta can maybe find the door.
It does seem weird.
I signed up for the Alberta separatist thing today. I mean, it's blowing up right now. It's crazy.
Wow, good for you.
They're saying pulling out almost 40% with no campaigning. And I'm like, here's the thing. If it becomes a thing, I'm going campaigning. I will go, I'll fucking go door knocking. You know, this is why we, you know?
Yeah. This is how weird it is getting. I mean, like Zach Schmidt here, he says, Carney is winning this election. I mean, because his, here's the post from Heresy says, Liberals, you've been played. Trump endorsed Carney again. But this is what Trump said on his thing. So very similar to the letter you just read. I just finished speaking with Prime Minister Mark Carney of Canada. It was an extremely productive call. We agree on many things and we'll be meeting immediately after Canada's upcoming election to work on elements of politics, business, and all other factors. that will end up being great for both the United States of America and Canada. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Like, what? After the election, like, what? No matter if he loses or wins, you're going to meet with him because he's so inside or out. He's such an outsider that you're going to meet with him about all this stuff, even if he doesn't. Like, is that not weird?
Seems weird. I mean, I don't know what he's up to.
Is he calling it? I mean, really? And then I started thinking about what you and I have been talking about.
It was good for Carney. So if he's pro Carney, shouldn't it be bad for Carney? I mean,
that's what I was going to say. Or this seems like maybe this is the way he gets what he wants, right? Maybe because the liberals will end up, if Carney really is, you know, working for King Charles, and he's going to do what the deeper conspiracy is, sell Canada to the States.
We can't rule out that he went over to run Brexit. Is what it seems like. His role of going to be governor of the Bank of England was to go there to manage leaving the European Union.
And here he is, right? And Trump's saying, oh, we got all these things to talk about. Thank you for attention to this matter. Like,
or do we get gobbled up by the UK?
Because maybe Trump knows that if Pierre wins, then this ain't going to happen the same way, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm at the point now where I think it's best for Alberta if Carney wins, because Pierre will appease us just enough to shut the fuck up for another generation. And it's like right now, everyone's riled up to the point where we could make something good happen, like, you know, or at least take a shot at it. If we, you know, at least take a shot, it'd be exciting even to just be able to do that.
It's controlled op. I mean, it really is the definition of how that works.
Anyway, let's jump over to this. I wanted to go through this quick, and then I got a bunch of drug stuff to get into the rest of the show. But this year, this is new. Came out yesterday, I think. Fraser Institute press release: Albertans contributed 53.6 billion more to the Canadian pension plan than retirees in Alberta received from it between 1981 and 2022. So basically the last 30 years. Albertans net
40 years. That's over a billion, 1.2 billion a year, probably, right?
Basically a third of the Confederation. We've probably only had these programs in place for it. So it's half. It's probably half as long as the pension's been in place for. When did the pension come around? Probably after the war, right?
No, I think it was 70. It was only like 71, I think.
So it's almost the whole pension history of the pension. For the people that are saying that, you know, Alberta is crazy to be wanting to pull out of this thing. So Albertans' net contribution, this is from the Fraser Report, the Fraser Institute. Albertans' net contribution to the Canada Pension Plan, meaning the amount Albertans paid into the program over and above what retirees in Alberta received in payments, was more than six times as much as any other province at $53.6 billion from 81 to 2022. Finds a new report published today by the Fraser Institute.
66, it started 1966.
So 15 years longer than.
Let's say it's going to be 1.2 billion a year. So even if you just took that number and divided it by 2 million. What's that? Do you have
it'd be another 15 years. So
per person per year.
Oh, so you want to divide by
2 billion divided by 1.2 billion divided by
4.5 million would be a super conservative, because that's more than our population is now. I think we're 4.3.
It's going to be like $500 a person or something like that.
But you can't do everyone. It's got to be a pensioner.
Okay, so let's do 2 million. Let's just do 1 million. Let's do 1 million.
Okay.
So it's 1 billion over a million. So it's $1,000 per pensioner per year.
I think they'll give us those numbers down. Let's see. Albertan workers have been helping to fund the retirement of Canadians from coast to coast for decades. And Canadians ought to know that without Alberta, the CPP would look much different, said Tegan Hill, director of Alberta policy at the Fraser Institute, and co-author of Understanding Alberta's Role in National Programs, Including the Canadian Pension Plan. I should go through that. That'd be good for a future episode. From 81 to 22, Alberta workers contributed 14.4% on average of the total CPP premiums paid, Canada's compulsory government-operated retirement pension plan, while retirees in the province received only 10% of the payments. Alberta's net contribution over that period was $53.6 billion. Crucially, only residents in two provinces, Alberta and British Columbia, paid more into the CPP than retirees in those provinces received in benefits. And Alberta's contribution was six times greater than BC's. I think BC's population's got to be, what, 30 or 40% more than ours? In that ballpark? You're muted, so I don't know what you said. The reason Albertans have paid such an outsized contribution to federal and national programs, including CPP in recent years, is because of the province's relatively high rates of employment, higher average incomes, and younger population. So we're just being milked out here. I mean, this is what Albertans really need to realize. As such, if Alberta withdrew from the CPP, Alberta workers could expect to receive the same retirement benefits, but at a lower cost, i.e. lower payroll tax than other Canadians. And it's worth mentioning that Quebec already does this, so it's not unheard of. Quebec already has their own. I don't know about other provinces, but I know Quebec does for sure. While the payroll tax would likely have to increase for the rest of the country, excluding Quebec because of that reason, to maintain the same benefits. Given current demographic projections, immigration patterns, and Alberta's long history of leading the provinces in economic growth, another reason to leave, Alberta workers would likely continue to pay more into than Alberta retirees got back. The Fraser Institute is an independent Canadian public policy research and educational organization with offices in Vancouver, Calgary, Toronto, Montreal, and Halifax, and ties to global network of 80 think tanks in 87 countries. So I think that's all I'm
far right. Far right Canadian think tank.
Did it say that? No, that's just what the. Oh, come on. The mouse doesn't work quite the same as.
Yeah, that was good, though. That's awesome. Yeah, that's good. Fascinating.
It's just that same plan. So here it is, sort of graphically for the people watching. Here's our. So we're low. BC's in the negative $9 billion. Alberta's in the negative $53.6 billion. Every other province on here is in the green. Nova Scotia plus 12, New Brunswick plus 4.5, Newfoundland 3.5. So. Ooh, let's see what's on this info. Oh, that's just that one. Okay, so that's that.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, great. Oh, great. Do you want to go or do you want me to get into the drug thing?
No, I'll go, I guess. I don't know why I'm echoing through your mic here, but... well, I tried to... You know, there's this big thing about tariffs right now. And it's pretty fascinating. So here's one take on it with tariffs, Canadian tariffs and stuff, right? This is from Table Salt. Just in, it's going to shut down. This is auto industry president says the entire vehicle manufacturing supply chain in North America is about to shut down due to Trump's tariffs.
Stop it for a sec. It's worth mentioning that, as predicted on this show, this has been the plan all along. I think that they plan to stop the auto manufacturing completely. Or I don't know what the bargain is. Like I said, I mean, cutting off that little bit of Ontario doesn't seem out of the question yet.
Yeah.
We're going to have a shutdown. And we're going to have a shutdown. I say a week. Some people are saying 2 weeks. Okay, what's the difference? And when you have a shutdown, you know, I just came back from Washington earlier this week, meeting with congressional reps in Alabama and Tennessee. And all I said to them was, forget Oakville and Woodstock and Oshawa. In Birmingham, for example, there's 1,300 jobs from a Canadian supplier here. If you let the president take open shots at Canada and they succeed, you have a problem. And by the way, the rest of Birmingham is full of suppliers, 5,000 to 7,000 employees that supply into Mercedes production, which is not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It may be that he has to send the U.S. over the edge to have hundreds of thousands of auto workers at home before he understands the depth of the problem that he's caused. Nobody in the business knows what's going to happen.
Which is?
We're going to have a shutdown.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to say about that guy. I really don't know what to say.
I guess here's what I think is I think that I don't know. I don't know that a shutdown is. I mean, if he can make it so that they can claim their on their tax, if it becomes a tax deductible to finance an American-made car, then it's going to be a wash. It doesn't matter if the car costs 40% more because of the tariffs for the part. It'll basically negate that from the American consumer paying more for cars because it becomes a tax break. I mean, it's a decent tax break, right? Your car ain't cheap. It's a pretty expensive.
Well, no, but the problem is the tariffs aren't only applying on a very small percentage of it, it sounds like, based on that policy. But here's a
Trump came out and said yesterday, that his plan is to make it so that any car bought in America that's financed by an American is a your car payment becomes tax deductible.
Yeah, totally. That's a great move. Carney vows $2 billion fund to protect Canada's automobile sector. So here we have a bunch of comments. You know, Canada's broke thanks to Trudeau and his band of dysfunctional liberal imbeciles. Chinese car manufacturers will be here within a year. And this is the thing I'll get into later a little bit here. Have you looked into how well the previous government's funds have done? No, you haven't, because you're the Globe and Mail. But I couldn't even get into that article because it's paywalled. So. And only $1.3 billion for border security over 6 years. A lot to cover what? EVs that nobody wants to buy. The whole EV setup was assuming U.S. as the main customer, which has gone up in flames. Throwing more money at it is madness. So, yeah, because none of these bailouts seem to really work, right? So that's alarming that they're talking about bailing it out. But I'm going to share this because he breaks down the car parts and stuff.
The plan itself, and they did recognize the fact that we do already have a trade agreement in place. So before Canadian-built cars or partially built cars, because Canada doesn't build an entire car itself, they're going to try to determine how many parts were actually manufactured in Canada versus the United States. So before everybody sits there and starts going, the sky is falling, the truth of the matter is that they're going to figure out, okay, how much of Canadian content is in the car. Well, if you were to turn around and actually do the numbers, and there's a few experts that did weigh in on this, it's only a couple thousand dollars. So 25% on a couple thousand dollars, a car could cost maybe $500 more. Now, I know there's going to be a few people that are going to say, jump up and down and say, well, wait a minute, Todd, that's not how it works. But the truth is that before everybody, you know, reacts and starts, you know, going crazy and starting tariff for tariff, which we don't need a tariff for, then perhaps we need to see, you know, what we're truly looking at. And remember, these dates are always moving. So here's what, you know, the existing leader of the Liberal Party, and I'm going to call him a non-elected prime minister, because this is exactly what this guy is. He's merely the head of the Liberal Party, and he has dissolved government. So quite frankly, he should not say anything on Canada's behalf, but he still decided to step both feet in it yesterday.
Have you heard this clip of him?
Probably.
Yeah. Should I play it? I guess I should.
Yeah.
I was going to play it somewhere else, but I'll play it here.
Our biggest challenge as a country is becoming the most urgent. Over the coming weeks, months, and years, we must fundamentally reimagine our economy. We will need to ensure that Canada can succeed in a drastically different world. The old relationship we had with the United States, based on deepening integration of our economies and tight security and military cooperation, is over.
Wow. You know what? I just want to let all Americans, and I'd love to know that if Donald Trump would listen to my podcast, but the truth is he's not speaking for Canada. I want to be very, very clear. Mark Carney is not speaking for Canada.
I don't know if we have to keep going on that. His clip was longer, but Carney's clip. I mean, everybody's been talking about it and sharing it. I can just play the rest of that on the post-millennial if you want, or I think you're muted or I can't hear you. Oh, you're still muted. On the actual
stream. On the actual stream, yeah. how they get you. Yeah, you might as well. I mean, it's going to get it. Add some comments when you're done.
Our biggest challenge as a country is becoming the most urgent. Over the coming weeks, months, and years, we must fundamentally reimagine our economy. We will need to ensure that Canada can succeed in a drastically different world. The old relationship we had with the United States, based on deepening integration of our economies and tight security and military cooperation, is over. What exactly the United States does next is unclear.
Do you know if he did the speech prior to his meeting with his call with Trump?
No, I think Trump called him and said, "You better watch it."
After this?
Oh yeah, because this is the part I'm talking about. I mean, you talk trade war all you want, but if we're talking about losing our security, that's crazy. I mean, I don't really care because I'm not, you know, of the mind, but I think that this is crazy to his base because his base are the people that are most scared about Russia and China and Al Qaeda and all these places. And, you know, whereas our stance around here is, we should just not be worried about what's happening over there. That's the main problem, is we're so entangled in what's happening on the other side of the planet that it's coming home to roost. But, you know, I think that his base is, this is probably, because I think that you can get them riled up to a certain extent, and that's fine, you know, buy Canada. I'm not going to go to Florida this year, which I think I already said on the show. But trying to get these people to say they're never going to Florida again, or, you know, they want to lose the protection of the strongest military in the world, or maybe lose long-term access to the most powerful economy in the world. Now, in the history of the world. Now, that's one side of things. I think that the other side of it is that it's going to get interesting because, he's saying some of the right things, right? From our side, I would agree that they should have probably reimagined the economy a while ago. You know,
but it just doesn't. Who knows which way?
I'm not going to say which way, but you know, in some ways, he's saying, because Pierre say the same thing. We don't know what Pierre's going to do. We don't know what any of them are going to do. But something has to give in the economy. Something has to give in the economy. No matter who wins, whether it's Pierre or Carney, we're at a fundamental crossroads because it's okay. If we're going to reimagine the economy, right? We're already talking about pipelines. We're already talking about natural gas. We're talking about all these, you know, how we're going to go into both of them have talked about the Ring of Fire in Ontario and getting that stuff out of the ground. And Indians aside from all that stuff requires I feel like we're at a crossroads for the country, no matter who wins. Really, in some ways, no matter who wins. Now, I think that if Carney wins, it's accelerated and Alberta and parts of the West find their way out of the Confederation sooner than later. But the other option is pipelines. You know, which I think that there's a chance that either person who wins, I think there's a real chance that they want to do some pipelines, and they're going to maybe use the, because like when we talked about with Marty on the show, he's like, well, the main problem is the landowners. Yeah, you get the federal government involved and all that can start going away, right? Sorry to the landowners, but if they want to build a pipeline through your shit, they're just going to do it. And as far as the Indians goes, they own the land already anyway, so that's not as hard to negotiate out of. I mean, aside from blockades and stuff like that, but from a legal standpoint, the federal government owns the Indian land, so they can do whatever they want. And we've seen around cities when they want to put in a new ring road or a new this, your property rights go out the window. Eminent domain comes in and the government will just take it at fair market value if you take the deal right away. And if you fight them on it, you know, at less and less fair market value. I think the people that stood up against Glenmore, there was like 11 houses that refused to sign on to the Glenmore deal, and I think they went from getting like 140% of appraised value to like 80% in the end when the government, and there was no winning. The government just took it under eminent domain. So I think that, you know, Pierre wins, he's talking pipelines. Carney wins, he's talking pipelines. Where's the pipeline going? Are we going to build a pipeline through the mountains? Fine, I'm down with that. I mean, there's all sorts of problems with that, with unceded territory, where BC is maybe the one province where they don't own the land from the Indians, where it could get weird in court even, and what does the states do now when you have an international thing going on in the UN? I don't know if the UN gets involved. I don't know what happens there, but the BC is kind of a standalone place in Canada because there's no treaties. It's not under the treaties yet, but regardless of that, let's just assume they can build the pipeline. They figure it out and they build the pipeline, the ocean. Well, it's like that whole BC government is sort of based on this no tankers legislation, right? That's their thing out there. So now I think BC is probably more amenable to changing that law. I think, you know, it seems like some of the stuff EB's talking about, like he might change that. Maybe they'll start allowing oil tankers back into the Pacific Ocean over there. Maybe they won't. And maybe that becomes a huge contention for BC all of a sudden. But going east, I think you got a huge contention with Quebec. And if you don't build any pipelines, you got a huge contention with Alberta and Saskatchewan. So I don't know, man. The more I try and like look at this, I don't see a long-term way out for, I mean, what if Alt Hiss, what's his name again?
Rudyard?
His video on the how Canada could fail from years and years ago is just becoming more and more prescient, in my opinion, because I'm at the point now where I don't think it matters who the fuck wins. Somebody's going to be no matter who wins, there's going to be provinces freaking out. Quebec's just about fucking had it.
Well, because we're already past the point of fixing it. I think we're past the point of, I mean, unless Pierre Brady,
Mark Carney, who was there to celebrate the divorce of fucking the European Union. I mean, the king's appointed man to help leave.
That's what I'm worried about. That's what I'm worried about is he's going to come in and take us far enough center to maintain control in the liberal world order.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I don't think there's a way to do that anymore. I don't think there's a way to do that. I don't think how he gets us to center without pissing off a major part of Canada. Specifically, I mean,
he can just virtue signal and not really do what he's saying to his base.
But then do you think Alberta's going to keep going with that? Because, I mean, the rhetoric coming out.
They're going to come far enough center where they're going to give some stuff.
No, it's end of equalization. This is what I'm talking about, where it's like Alberta's at the point now where it's like, no, we're done with equalization. That things fundamentally need to change. And Quebec seems to be at that point as well. That's what I'm saying is I don't think that you can go far enough to send.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I mean, I hope you're right. But this is where the LADA meme comes in, right? Is because we're going to bring in a new LADA in Canada. I mean, they're going to subsidize and say, well, let's build these simple, cheap little cars like Soviet Cold War cars. Have you seen the memes about those Toyota trucks, right? Because remember, they were trying to get their Toyota trucks into Canada, those $10,000 trucks. Like, I would buy one of those trucks, a brand new simplified transportation vehicle with a bed in it and everything, right? And Canada wouldn't allow it to happen, right? Because it would
That's the problem. Destroy
their own trucking, like the trucks, the Dodge trucks and all that kind of stuff, right?
Well, that's not their truck either. That's a thing to remember.
Oh, that's weird, but they think it is, right? It feels like it's Canadian trucks.
But it's not.
Who is it, America?
It's Canadian manufacturing.
Is it even Canadian? They're just putting it together, though, or?
But Ford's is a U.S. company. Chevy's a U.S. company. Dodge is a U.S. company. Honda, which is, I mean, most of, there's a Ford one, I think, in Ontario. Now, I'm going out on a limb here, so I'll probably fuck some stuff up. But most of those cars getting made in Southern Ontario, you're looking at your Hondas and your Toyotas and your Hyundais, exactly what you're talking about. Because you can't make cars in Korea and ship them over in shipping containers. It just doesn't make sense. You make the cars here. I mean, Japan was the first ones to do it. They really like cornered the business because they had such a huge demographic problem that they were like, well, this is what we'll do. We'll just set up shop over there. They'll be happy because their people are working, but we get to make most of the money. You know, yeah. I mean, arguably it wasn't the worst model in the world.
Yeah. Well,
it's weird. It's not the worst model in the world, I guess, when everybody's getting along.
During the Cold War, Ladas were exported widely to second and third world countries because they were cheap to produce, easy to maintain, and didn't rely heavily on Western parts. This made them a symbol of utilitarian, no-frills transportation. Functional, but far from luxurious or innovative.
That's way easier though, because you got to think that like during the Cold War, like cars are just kind of coming out anyway. You know what I mean? Europe, like nowadays, if you imagine going to that from like, cruise control.
Okay, let me get back to this clip here then.
But what is clear?
I'm down for a LADA, by the way.
Oh yeah, no, me too. That's what I'm saying. I just want something reliable, simple. Like I don't need the luxury anymore. Just give me something affordable, simple. Maybe that's even doesn't have any electronics that wouldn't stop running during an EMP or a solar flare. Like you know,
how long do you think it takes to spin up an auto assembly plant?
Well, I mean, Elon could do it in no time. I mean, he put together that massive data center in like 19 days. I've got a clip on this for another show where like the
data center is pretty easy, I think, though, right? Like compared to a car manufacturer, like how long did it take him to spin up Tesla?
Yeah, I know, but he's really, really good at putting that kind of stuff together. Probably the best in the world ever that we've ever had that can put a flow, like a manufacturing flow together.
Yeah, but now you get to assume the government's doing it.
Well, then.
Because nobody wants to invest in Canada. You know, nobody's like, there's no Elon that's interested in spending money in Canada because we're such a fucking shit show up here that it's going to be the government. And when they got involved in that fucking pipeline, that this is what the left likes to tout Alberta about. Well, we bought you a $30 billion pipeline. It's like, well, it would have been four if you would have let the private sector build it. And, you know, now you're talking about taxing it.
Yeah. And like our friends in the chat said, when I asked about these types of cars, they're like, well, the problem is all the emissions regulations, right? You can't just make a mechanical car now because it won't pass all those regulations. But let's finish off this clip.
And you lose access to all that, like all that stuff you're building down there is proprietary to companies that aren't owned by Canada.
Right.
So can you even use the same plant to spin up the same, you got to like come up with all this.
Oh yeah. Everything's got to be from scratch. Yeah.
Certain stuff's got to be in the public domain now to a certain extent. Right. But that's where they get you. I hadn't thought about that. All that emission stuff.
But it's just too bad we couldn't come up with something ourselves in Canada, like our own little like domestic car manufacturer for cheap cars for the people. Soviet version of the Lada. Like, what do
you mean? The problem is you just can't compete with the market. Well, it only works with the wall.
But well, why not? I mean, if the market's if you're paying, like
you know why the Soviets had the ladder, right? Because there's an Iron Curtain. So no,
that was in Germany, not Soviet, though. I mean.
Iron Curtain was the separation of the East and the West. So all the
of Germany, though. Right?
No, that's the Berlin Wall is Germany. The Iron Curtain is the entire the whole way down. It's a separation of East and West between the communist world.
Oh yeah.
So you weren't allowed to like do anything. So I guess the question would be: is how many LADAs are still running around those countries since the market has now opened up to reallow the Western car market? Is it still a thing? Is it still going, or has it just totally collapsed? Because the Canadian car could be great if that's all they'll let us buy. But it's like, if you got to choose that and you can get a Honda Civic still, or you can get a truck from the States, or maybe.
Yeah, I guess we'll never be able to compete. I mean, but that's the whole point, is we should be able to compete and we should work towards that. I mean, making our own stuff that we, so we can compete and,
your point of it already being too late. It's like, this is the stuff we should have been thinking about. I mean, if we weren't thinking about joining the States back then, we probably should have been rethinking how
we're doing everything.
How we intricately our dependency on them was.
That's why it feels like controlled demolition. Okay, let's listen to the rest of this.
Does that put me in the States, though?
What?
Does that put me in the States? The controlled demolition?
I don't know.
What if they bought, like, all of Rupert's land when they bought the bay?
Yeah, that would be a good trick, eh? Trick, we already own you.
I mean, that's the other weird thing is this, well, we own like a giant chunk of the, we own a third, I think it amounts to about a third of the country.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Have agency. We have power. Canadians have agency. We have power. We are masters in our own home. To submit chez nous. We can control our destiny.
Really?
We can give ourselves
He's the worst
much more than ever. Any
I mean, did he not take a single class?
No, dude, he's way better than a lot of them. I mean, he's a CEO type guy. He's been speaking to boards and stuff for his whole life. It's fine. It's just he's a corporate speaker.
He's not
a political guy.
That's all. Yeah, that's what I mean. He's terrible.
And look at how he's looking at. Watch how he looks at the camera during what he says in this.
Foreign government, including the United States, can ever take away. We can deal with this crisis best by building our strength right here at home. It will take hard work. It will take steady and focused determination from governments.
Do you know how you know he's bad?
From labor.
Because every time he pauses for effect, there's no effect.
From Canadians.
You know, it's like
we
I want
to. We will need to dramatically clap. Reduce our reliance on the United States. We will need to pivot our trade.
I just literally heard a pin drop, I think.
Ships elsewhere. And we will need to do things previously thought impossible at speeds we haven't seen in generations.
I mean, that's like you said, it's some of the stuff you want to hear, right? But it's just 15 years too late.
Maybe.
But we can make ourselves more productive and therefore more competitive. We can break down internal trade barriers. We can build a stronger and more resilient economy. And that's
Probably, right? NAFTA probably ruins it.
Yeah.
Well, that's like early 90s, probably. Is that Bill Clinton?
I think so.
Focused on as your prime minister.
So there you go. I mean, yeah, it's too bad. It's a little too late. I just don't believe him because he's the climate czar. I mean, you know, he's trying to.
Maybe this is what he has to do instead of go to jail.
But that's kind of what I mean about moving center, right? Well, yeah. I mean, are they investigating him? I mean, what's going on?
It seems like he's under investigation. Or they're like, all right, you go reverse all those policies in Canada publicly, and you can stay out of jail.
An unelected globalist WEF billionaire declares that our centuries-old relationship with the USA is over. He is insane or evil, likely both. Canadians must not let this slide.
Well, let's jump over to this. This is, I don't know if you heard about this on the mainstream news, but 108 kilos of cocaine shipment from U.S. At Alberta border crossing. So, Canada.
Going which way?
In? I think it was coming in, yeah. But let's find out who was bringing it in. And maybe they were trading. This is my thought, is that they bring down fentanyl and trade it for cocaine. Because the cocaine's got to come from the south, right?
Yeah.
Can't make a cocaine lab in Canada.
Why not?
Well, you need the cocoa. Canada Border Services agency officers confiscated more than 100 kilograms of cocaine earlier this month from a commercial transport vehicle at the Coutts border crossing in southern Alberta. Border officers seized approximately 108 kilograms of cocaine, which would be about 250 pounds for our Americans. Following a secondary examination of the vehicle that was attempting to enter Canada from the United States, the CBSA said in a March 20th press release, I've been in secondary examination many times. This is a problem with bitching about the government. You tend to have border trouble. The border agency said a Canadian was driving the vehicle, but its load originated from the United States. So as a Canadian went down, came up. Let's see who the Canadian was. 26-year-old Calgary resident Arshdeep Singh. We should have a little bell for whenever it's an Indian migrant that gets caught with drugs. Has been charged with importing a controlled substance and possessing a controlled substance for the purpose of trafficking in connection with the seizure. I mean, we should be freaking out about this, shouldn't we? Even if he didn't bring fentanyl down. Singh is scheduled to appear in a Lethbridge court on May 7th. The Integrated Border Enforcement Team in Alberta, a joint force operation between the RCMP, Federal Policing Northwest Region, CBSA, and Calgary Police Service are collaborating on the investigation. Working together with our law enforcement partners is key to stopping drug trafficking. So let's see some other drug seizures at Coutts. The most recent incident is the latest in a string of drug seizures involving the Coutts border crossing. Coutts is the busiest crossing in Alberta and shares a border with Sweetgrass, Montana. Nearly $3 million worth of methamphetamine and cocaine destined for Canada was seized at the border during two separate incidents in December and January. The first seizure occurred on Christmas Eve 2024 when officers discovered 186 kilograms, about 400 pounds of methamphetamine in a commercial truck. The second seizure occurred on January 18th when officers found two cardboard boxes in a truck trailer containing multiple bricks of cocaine weighing 42 kilograms, 100 pounds. Does it give us a name on those ones? It doesn't. No, it doesn't tell us who the people in the earlier one is. Do you think I could probably find that quick? It's probably worth finding, right? Do you have something we could do for a sec?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'd love to sort of finish off my thing too here. I want you to guess. How do I do this with, I'll wait with this one. I'll read something from Kirk Lubomov in the meantime while you're finding that. Canada's week recap. Here we go. Bank of Canada cut rates 0.25%. Inflation went up 2.6%. China executes Canadians. China puts 100% tariffs on canola. Record amount of refugees, asylum seekers living in Canada, 457,000. Forgiving Canada lost decade, Trudeau is leaving with an $8.4 million pension. Carney added a mass immigration proponent as an advisor. Tesla was removed from auto show in Vancouver because they are more upsetting than the record of deaths from overdoses there. 9.8% in drop in home sales last month. 106,000 people left Canada last year. It's the highest amount since 67. Ouch. Canada went from fifth place in the World Happiness Report in 2015 to 18th last year. Mark Carney announces a $6 billion Arctic radar system, picking up Australian company rather than a Canadian company, DTA Systems. $187 million for Jasper rebuilding, $100 million for Gazans. Small business optimism is at a 25-year low. Team Canada still hasn't attracted a single penny into Canada. There you go.
All right, let's see what we got. So if we go to the first one, which was December 24th, they're not telling us who. So in both cases, the arrested drivers were transferred to the RCMP, and then they're not saying who. So those ones are saying no because they won't tell us who because of ongoing investigation. In cooperation with law enforcement, the significant seizure, no charges have been laid and updates will be provided. A Calgary resident, that's all they say. And then the last one, the 42 kilograms, again, the driver was arrested. However, specific details about the suspect, including their identity and any subsequent charges, have not been publicly disclosed. So there's three other busts that they're not saying who it was. I feel like if it was white dudes, we would know, or Indians. Not well, if like, you know, Canadian Indians.
Yeah. All right. Is there more on drugs to do?
We might as well jump to this one quick. Report finally in on the BC drug decriminalization and safer supply is associated with more overdoses. So we've taken a lot of flack for this one. I haven't played this clip yet. Let's see how it goes.
I can't hear it.
You can't hear it?
No.
Anyway, that's just Bonnie. What's that? That's Bonnie Henry going off about how good safe drug supply is.
Just recently, even still? My God, it's unbelievable.
No, I think it's kind of older, but yeah, let me push this back over there.
I think there must be some pretty heavy realizations that it's making things worse, you know?
Yeah, the report says there was no change in deaths associated with safer supply, but neither policy appeared to mitigate. That's just how, if it was working better than the other one. The observed increase in opioid hospitalizations without a corresponding increase in opioid deaths may reflect greater willingness to seek medical assistance because decriminalization could reduce stigma associated with the drug use, the study says. However, it is also possible that reduced stigma and removal of criminal penalties facilitated the diversion of safer opioids, contributing to increased hospitalizations. The research found that safer supply alone was associated with a 33% increase in opioid hospitalizations, with the addition of decriminalization was associated with a further spike for an overall increase of 58% compared with before the Safer Supply Program was introduced in 2020. There was insufficient evidence to conclusively attribute an increase in opioid overdose deaths to these policy changes. So they won't say that it killed more people, but it put an extra 60% into the hospital. It's not the first time researchers have looked into the overdose hospitalizations and safer supply. A study published in January 2024 by some of the same authors as the latest investigation found an almost 63% relative increase in the opioid overdose hospitalization rate across BC after the introduction of safer supply. BC's health ministry did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the latest study. The province's coroner's service said earlier this month that 152 people died of toxic drug overdoses in January, the fourth consecutive month that the toll was under 160. Deaths in BC in January were down more than 30% from a year earlier. There have recently been declines in drug deaths across North America, with Health Canada reporting a 12% decline from January to September 2024 compared to the same period in 2023.
Of overdose deaths?
Yes.
Huh. Well, that's good news.
That's across North America, though.
Oh.
It seems like BC's just sort of in line with that.
Okay.
In line with that. And then the last one I have on that vein. Now, this one's a little bit older, but it's just interesting that we didn't really hear about it. Canadian police seize fentanyl and make hundreds of arrests as tariff threat looms large.
It is weird how we don't hear about this. Like, why is the media, I mean, do they wonder down there? Like, because the Trump admin knows about this. Why none of this gets talked about, or does it? Maybe, I mean, I don't watch TV, so maybe.
Well, this is from about a month ago. You'd think it would have been all over the place by now. So Ottawa, Canadian police arrested hundreds and seized illegal drugs, cash, firearms, and stolen vehicles in a national sprint targeting fentanyl and synthetic opioids, taking action on one of the U.S. President Donald Trump's concerns about the northern border. The operation was an opportunity to demonstrate the cohesion and dedication of Canada's law enforcement agencies at all three levels of government to counter the production and distribution of fentanyl and other synthetic opioids in the country. They said in a news release, the operation ran from December 9th to January 18th. I mean, wouldn't you think that they would have been jumping up and down about this? I mean, this was like right when he was coming in. Well, we just did this, we're doing that, we're... The federal police force said the operation, which included law enforcement agencies across the country, resulted in 524 arrests and the seizure of about 46 kilograms of fentanyl and more than 15,000 pills of fentanyl and other synthetic opioids. The release did not mention Trump, but Canada has been trying to prove it is taking the problem of fentanyl seriously.
Is it though?
Yeah, it doesn't.
I mean, is it though? No,
it's not.
Read that sentence again.
Canada has been trying to prove it is taking the fentanyl problem seriously.
Really?
The federal government earmarked $1.3 billion for border security measures in the 2024 fall economic statement. On February 3rd, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau secured a 30-day reprieve from Trump's threatened universal tariffs on Canadian goods after he promised to appoint a fentanyl czar. So that was before all that. We haven't heard shit about it. The 46 kilograms of fentanyl seized in the sprint is more than the 19.5 or 43 pounds of fentanyl seized at the Canadian border between October 23 and September 24. I don't think I need to go into any more of that. I mean, it's just more of the same. But I just thought it was an interesting article because I didn't hear anything about it.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the one where they found the boat and all the stolen vehicles and stuff and all that. but I guess not.
There's this one here. I mean, for people who might want to get up to date on, because the seat Carney's running in, he kicked in a dude that's been there for like four elections or something. Kicked him out. Yeah, this guy here, Arya.
Well, he's the guy that got blocked from running against Carney.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Former Liberal MP addresses claims he was blocked from re-election because of foreign interference over his connections.
Oh, that's unlistenable, right? Arya was informed on March 20th that the party revoked his candidacy in the April 28th election after the Nepean riding, which he has represented since 2015. Prime Minister and Liberal Party leader Mark Carney is contesting the riding for the Liberals in this election. Based on a review of new information by the chair of the Green Light Committee, the national campaign co-chair is recommending the revocation of your status as a candidate, Bevan said in his March 20th letter. Arya challenged the accusations in a March 26th post on social media. As a member of parliament, I have engaged with numerous diplomats and heads of government, both in Canada and internationally. At no point did former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau or any cabinet minister raise concerns about my meetings or public statements. The sole point of contention with the Liberal Party has been my outspoken advocacy on issues important to Hindu Canadians and my firm stance against Khalistani extremism. Imagine that, what a prick. Anyway, the petition said the registry was a misleading way to identify sources of foreign influence. Little government went ahead to enact the registration as part of the 2024 legislation. So they kicked an Indian out. But I mean, to be fair, we don't know that he's not one of the dudes mentioned in that foreign interference report because nobody will let us read it.
They wouldn't go. They wouldn't try to run for prime minister if they did.
You'd think that'd be pretty bold. Let's just go for prime minister. Fuck it.
So this is going to blow you away a bit. What do you think Carney's going to do if he won, like after the election? How would he handle the Americans after the election?
He will capitulate on almost everything.
Right. He'll quietly fold, apparently. It's going to blow you away. Who said this?
Now, allow me to continue. He talks a little bit about Mexico and then he goes back to Canada. So he says, by contrast, Canadian leaders have a political incentive to put up a bigger fight because Trump's threats towards Canada's economy and sovereignty have sharply inflamed nationalist sentiment north of the border in the run-up to the April 28th elections. Now, here is the key part right here. It says, however, I expect Ottawa will quietly fold after the vote to ensure that ongoing relations with the U.S. remain functional. Canada will quietly fold, he says. So Ian Bremmer says that Canadian leaders are faking it, that they're only pretending to put up a fight against President Trump, and that they will quietly fold to the Americans after the election campaign. Okay, so what does this all have to do with Liberal leader Mark Carney? Well, everything. The author Ian Bremmer runs the Eurasia Group. He's the president and the founder of that organization. Now, if that sounds familiar, it's because that's where Mark Carney's wife, Diane Fox Carney, well, that's where she works. Ian is her boss. Who else works at the Eurasia Group with Ian? None other than Gerald Butts, the hard left environmentalist, Justin Trudeau's best friend, policy architect, and principal secretary. Trudeau threw Butts under the bus to take the blame for the SNC-Lavalin scandal, where they pressured Attorney General Jody Wilson-Raybould to cut a sweetheart deal with a large Liberal donor. Well, once Butts was pushed out of government, he hopped over to join Bremmer as the vice chairman of the Eurasia Group. Liberal insider Warren Kinsella spilled the beans on social media that Gerald Butts was now back in politics and working for Mark Carney. Here is what Warren Kinsella wrote back on January 12th. He said, Mark Carney is the Team Trudeau candidate. His campaign is being run by Gerald Butts, Katie Telford, et al., the ones who had to resign due to scandal or who had been implicated in multiple scandals, the ones who reduced the Liberal Party down to 16%. Carney equals Trudeau. Well, the Globe and Mail also recently confirmed this claim and reported that Gerald Butts is indeed advising Mark Carney on the campaign trail. This is the way that they describe Gerald Butts. They write, Eurasia Group Vice Chair Gerald Butts, Mr. Trudeau's principal secretary from 2015 to 2019, who has been offering advice to Mr. Carney. What a nice way of putting it. And the connections with the Eurasia Group don't end there. Former CBC journalist turned Liberal Party candidate Evan Solomon. Isn't it cute how that works, the revolving door between the CBC and the Liberal Party? Well, Evan Solomon is also part of this story. Solomon, as it turns out, got fired as a journalist several years ago over ethical issues surrounding high-priced fine art deals that he was facilitating through his journalism. It turned out that one of the wealthy buyers that Solomon was coordinating art sales with while also pretending to interview them through his journalism was none other than Mark Carney. Check out this headline in the UK Guardian. It says, Canadian journalist sacked in scandal involving art sale to Mark Carney. Bank of England governor was interviewed on CBC, the national broadcaster, by Evan Solomon, who brokered deals and took secret commissions, says reports. Well, the disgraced former journalist picked up a cushy job with, you guessed it, the Eurasia Group. According to his bio, he is a member of the Eurasia Group's management committee, and he's also the publisher of G0 Media, the very publication that we're talking about, where Ian Bremmer admitted the plan for Canada to fold to President Trump right after the election. Now, to be fair, Ian Bremmer is an American political scientist and businessman focused on global political risk. He's not a Canadian, and he's not really a liberal insider because he's not part of the Canadian Liberal Party, but he is surrounded by the creme de la creme of liberal insiders in Canada, including the prime minister's wife, the prime minister's principal advisor, and one of Mark Carney's star liberal candidates. Ian Bremmer is also paid to be in the know. That's his job. His job is to predict what will happen politically and then to advise his clients on their risk profile.
Well, I mean, what it's hard to stop that. It's just such a great little rundown of the web of the entanglement of all these people, right? But why would he even say that then? You know, if it's all so connected, why would he say to anybody out loud that, oh, he's just going to quietly fold afterwards?
Yeah, I don't know. It's maybe to make sure that the right people hear it.
Yeah, maybe. So maybe this is kind of more of like a leak than an actual.
Because most people won't hear it. You know what I mean? Most of the public ain't going to hear shit about that. Nothing. Yeah. But
it's a big shout out to Juno News and Candace Malcolm there for that. I think that was Candace Malcolm, right? What a great little synopsis there.
I think, is that Kian Bexty? I think his dad's going to end up being my MP.
Yeah.
I should take that seat. Then I could just say the same stuff. Great America, Great America, Great America. Every time I get on there. I heard about this on Great America. You guys, this is fucking crazy. Anyway, that's all we got for this week, I think.
Oh, yeah.
We appreciate if you getting some value from our little shows here. Head over to alist.ca. That's a-list, like it is behind Graham there, a-list.ca. And there's a support button there and a link to all the episodes, and you can share it with people. Hopefully soon we'll be monetized on YouTube, and you'll be able to support us over here as well. But there's a website and a podcast you can share with people if they prefer that format. Check that out. Check out our other show, Grand America, the Grand America Show, grandamerica.ca. And if you go to that site, it'll take you to everything else we're up to over there. We got a bunch of stuff up in the menu, audiobooks, trips, all that sort of fun stuff. But yeah, support us if you like our content, alist.ca. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Who's going to kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. kill this sacred cow. You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrities post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow.